Our next speaker is Colleen Fuller, and Colleen is an independent health researcher for the Parkland Institute, a research associate with the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, and is also the president and co-founder of PharmaWatch, a public advocacy group working for increased public involvement in prescription drug safety and regulation. She's the author, among other things, of Caring for Profit, How Corporations Are Taking Over Canada's Healthcare System, and has spoken extensively on federal regulation of both health services and prescription medications. Colleen has been published widely on healthcare reform, prescription drug policies, federal and provincial health policies, the Canada Health Act, the impact of trade liberalization on health services, and privatization. And most recently, she's the co-author of The Bottom Line, The Truth Behind Private Health Insurance in Canada. We have a few copies on the table at the back. I think they were going fast. There are a lot of ideas in circulation about how our healthcare system can be changed to become more efficient and meet more of people's needs. And I think what we hear people advocating most at this point is an expansion of private health insurance, with the idea being that if we have private health insurance, it will take some of the burden off the public system. And Colleen's going to talk about the implications of this kind of approach and why it's not a solution. Thank you, Colleen.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming out tonight, and thank you for inviting me to speak. I'm actually going to just touch on three points tonight, and some of the points I'm touching on are covered in the book, The Bottom Line, that Penny referred to. The first point I want to talk about is the fact that the push for more private insurance in Canada is leading us down an American and not a European road. It's an Americanization of our healthcare system and a corporatization of our healthcare. The second point is that private health insurance is actually serving a shrinking portion of the working Canadians, and that those who count themselves amongst the lucky ones amongst working people are finding that they are not all served equally well by private health insurance. The third point is that the rights of insurers and employers actually trump our rights, our charter rights to health care. So and I don't have a watch, so, oh, there's a clock up there. Okay, I'll try to stay in my time frame. You know, Canadians got health care because of their experience with private health insurance. It's not as if we don't have experience in this country with the private health insurance market. In the good old days, before we were forced to shoulder the burden of equity, we were Canadians really did confront the realities in the private market, not just for insurance, but also in terms of providers, because providers also were private. And that experience is not a happy one, as anybody who lived during those times will tell you, and there's been a lot written about it as well. Before Medicare, there was just a little bit more than half of Canadians were covered by private health insurance. Most of that was through their employers. For everybody else, for the approximately 47% of Canadians who were not covered by private insurance, they did not choose not to be covered. They simply could not afford the premiums for private insurance, or they weren't working. And prior to the 1950s, most people who had private insurance, most working people, were only able to buy private insurance for themselves and not for their families. So that's why we continue, even now, in our sort of collective memory, we know that there are a lot of stories in Canada of people who were forced to sell their homes and all of their assets in order to obtain health care. And in fact, health care was a leading cause of personal bankruptcy in Canada before Medicare. Most people don't know that, but that is a fact. And that really is the true history of Medicare. Today, if we want to, we can look south of the border to really understand the great gift that previous generations have bequeathed to us. And that generation fought over many, many, many decades to get the kind of healthcare system that we have. We look to the United States to get an idea of the catastrophe that we were able to avoid and the catastrophe that might be down the road if we follow the prescription that's being handed down by people who are in favor of private health insurance and increased private provision. I say that it's an American-style healthcare system that they're advocating for a number of reasons, one of which is that 78% of the world's insurance market is actually in the United States. The remaining 32% are really divided up. The largest portion of that 32%, is it 22% is divided up amongst a handful of countries. In Europe, in the European Union, there isn't one healthcare system in Europe, of course, it's different in every country, but in the European Union, private insurance makes up less than 5% of the total health expenditures in the European Union, and there's no country in the European Union which spends more than 10% of its total health care costs on private insurance compared to Canada, not on health care costs, but private insurance contributes to the cost of health care up to 10% in Europe compared to 15% here. In the United States, almost 50 million people have no health insurance at all, and of those who do have insurance, they're confronting ever higher co-pays, deductibles, and premiums. I'm sure that a lot of people here remember Christopher Reeves. He was Superman in the 1990s. In 1995, he had a really terrible horse riding accident, and it left him completely paralyzed. After that time, he became known as a really vigorous advocate of stem cell research in the United States. But what is less known is that he also became a very strong advocate of a Canadian-style universal health care system. And the reason for that is because he had, by the end of his life, he died in 2004, he had completely exhausted all of his personal assets in order to continue to be able to obtain long-term care and home support. And he was basically bankrupt. And he came face-to-face with the leading cause of personal bankruptcy in the United States, actually, which is the cost of health care. Those who are declaring bankruptcy in the United States, though, are not uninsured people. They're people who have private health insurance. A recent study done by a Harvard University professor found that more than three-quarters of the families who declared bankruptcy in the United States were actually covered by health insurance at the time that their illness occurred. And so the insurance that they had simply did not cover the full cost, and they had to dip into their own assets. And that was the reality that led Christopher Reeve to urge Americans to take a look at Canada's healthcare system. Now, here we're being told that we should look at the private marketplace, that the private marketplace is the preferred location for obtaining healthcare. The only reason that we don't have these same problems that are occurring in the United States is because of our public healthcare system. But the private insurance market in Canada looks a lot like the U.S. insurance market. And when I say that, what I mean is that there's lots of different reasons for that, and I should say that one of the reasons is because of the integration of our insurance market with the United States under the North American Free Trade Agreement. It's one of the sectors that has the insurance, health insurance and private insurance market has, for all intents and purposes, integrated with the United States. So the same rules and conditions that are confronting Americans in the private insurance market, we don't get the full punch of that because of our public health care system. But the further we go down that road, the more that we will be seeing excuse me, these conditions prevail in Canada. I want to look at the private insurance market for just a second in Canada, who's covered and who's not covered here. 70% of of total health care costs are covered publicly in Canada, 30% are covered privately. Of that 30%, it's split about 50-50 between out-of-pocket payments and private insurance. So the insurance market, the health insurance market here actually is only 15%, covers 15% of the total health care expenditure in Canada. Like the U.S., premiums in Canada are also escalating and in fact have increased annually for the last decade between 15 and 20%. This is exactly the same situation in the U.S. Insurance market. In addition, we are also following a pattern, which I suppose it's appropriate to call it a North American pattern and not really an American pattern. It's a pattern in North America where the numbers of people who are covered by private benefits, working people I'm talking about, people who are employed, is falling quite drastically, actually. And it's fallen really sharply between 1995 and 2001. We haven't even seen the latest data yet from StatsCan because they haven't published it. But what we're seeing is that the rates of coverage are going down quite significantly, and the main reason is because of rising premiums. Employers just simply are not prepared to pay the higher premiums, and they're cutting off their employees either. And well, they're not always cutting them back. They're either scaling up the co-pays and the deductibles, scaling back on the level of benefits that are available, or refusing to continue to support the supplementary health benefits in the workplace. So here's how it looks in Canada now between 1995 and 2001. In 1995, 63.3% of all workers were covered by benefits. Many more men than women were covered, about 68% males and 68% of men and 57% of females. In 2001, just 6 years later, that had fallen to 51.8%. So it fell from 63.3 to 51.8 just in the 6 years. And the people who were the hardest hit between men and women, of course, it was women who were harder hit. The group that saw some of the biggest losses were in the unionized sector. 84.3% of unionized workers were covered in 1995, compared to 2001, 66.2%. That is a really steep decline in the level of coverage. Unorganized workers didn't lose nearly as much, but they also didn't start out as high a place. Their rates fell to 46.3%. In 2001 from 49.2%. But this really reflects the way the private insurance market functions in Canada. It functions on a discriminatory basis. The people who are the least likely to be covered work in the private sector. The people who are the most likely to be covered are public sector workers. The people who are younger and older are the least likely to be covered. If you are a young person working in Canada today, if you work in the retail sector, you are so unlikely to be covered by a public or a private insurance benefit plan. You're unlikely to be covered by anything, actually, even a good wage. But the level of coverage for people who work in the retail sector is very, very low. All of this leads me to my final point, which is that the private insurance market is very discriminatory, and it would discriminate against many of the people in this room. People who need health care are fine. If we had to depend entirely on the private insurance market, we would be no better off than the Americans. In fact, I would argue that we would be a lot less better off than the United States is. If you or your child has a pre-existing condition, you can forget about obtaining private insurance benefits. If you have a chronic condition like diabetes or asthma, if you have heart disease, if you had cancer, you are unlikely to be offered an insurance coverage. If your mother had breast cancer, you will be denied coverage for that condition if you go to buy a private insurance policy on your own outside of the workplace. The Canadian Human Rights Act allows the private insurance industry to discriminate on three or what the, they don't say, they don't call it discrimination, they call it distinctions. They can make distinctions amongst Canadians on the basis of your age, your sex, or your health condition. This is entrenched in the Human Rights Act of Canada. And what an insurer has to do simply is to show that the actuarial risk is too high for the insurer to, and by the way, this also applies to employers. If an employer, if you work for an employer who says, because you have diabetes, you're forcing my insurance premiums to go through the roof, and so I'm going to eliminate you from the group benefit plan. This is a right that employers have. It's entrenched in the Human Rights Act, and there is no charter challenge to the Human Rights Act, at least that I know about. The actuarial principles that are the basis for allowable discrimination read like this. This is an interpretation from the Justice Department. Among the actuarial principles that may be used in respect of age is that benefits are more costly to provide to older than to younger employees, and that gives them the right to discriminate against older workers. Among the actuarial principles that may be used in respect of sex is that women live longer on average than men, and so equal benefits may cost more. And so insurers and employers can discriminate against women on the basis of sex, not on the basis of a health condition. Among the actuarial principles that may be used in respect of disability is that some health conditions may create a higher cost burden on the insurance plan than others. Well, no kidding. That is true. In the private market, people who are older, people who are who have any kind of another health condition are not going to get insurance. And this is why in Quebec, although under the Charter of Rights, George Zeliotis, who brought the charter challenge to Quebec, won the personal right to get private insurance, but he won't get private insurance because he's an old man with a heart condition who needs a hip replacement, and all three of those things would disqualify him if he went to get it on his own. But the reason so many Canadians have lost benefits until now is not primarily because of this kind of discrimination, these kinds of distinctions, so-called. The main reason is because health insurance premiums are increasing far above the rate of inflation. That is what the main reason is. But we have to understand that if we rely, the more that we rely on the private insurance market, the more we will confront these kinds of discriminatory actions which are entrenched in the Human Rights Act. You know, Murray talked about the need to change the language that we use, and I really second that. I think that that's very, very important. Healthcare is not really about personal rights in Canada. It never has been. It's always been about a collective entitlement. And this is the language that we need to resurrect when we're talking about healthcare. And this is why when Canadians were fighting for healthcare system that provided equity, it was a social justice issue. It was a social justice issue now, and it's a social, or then, and it is as well now, today. The private market does not uphold equity or equality, and as I said, it in fact discriminates, and that is not the basis of equality. They have the right to do that. Equity and equality in healthcare is available in what Martin Luther King called the Bank of Justice, the great vault of opportunity, as he described it. And we continue to have this great vault of opportunity in Canada, and I think that we really have to continue to emphasize that this is a social justice issue. People who are arguing for private health care argue is that the public health care system is unsustainable. And what they're really saying is that equity and equality in health care is no longer sustainable in Canada. And I think that we have to counter the argument by saying that we have to increase the assets in what Martin Luther King called the Bank of Justice. We have to increase the assets, that it, in fact, it is the discriminatory practices in the private insurance market that are not sustainable. Thanks.